You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, how different would your life be if you didn't have siblings? If you have siblings. We take a moment to appreciate and recall some good stories about brothers and sisters this National Siblings Day. We're taking your calls coming up next. Now, parts of Wisconsin are already seeing the effects of a late winter snowstorm that could end up dumping more than a foot of snow in far northwestern Wisconsin. The storm will mean a mix of rain, sleet, and snow for other parts of the state, with much of the weather expected to die out by this Friday. Tim Halbach is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Milwaukee. Tim, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, Tim, some of the predictions I was seeing this morning were for northwestern Wisconsin to get something like 12 to 18 inches of snow. Is that holding up?
Yeah, that's still holding up. There's winter storm warnings that have been posted for most of the northwestern portion of the state. Due to that combination of heavy snow, it's going to be a heavy wet snow as well for a good chunk of the northern part of the state. We're getting kind of our one band of snow that it looks like it's going to come through here and then lift to the northeast through the rest of today in the southern part of the state. But really anybody that has any kind of travel, thoughts about traveling up to the Northwoods over the next couple days, they should be aware about this winter storm that's coming through up there.
And how long is the snow actually going to last up there? Is this going to be a lot of snow in a short period of time, or is this 12 to 18 inches over the next couple few days?
So a lot of it is coming in the, with this first band, this is kind of setting it up. A lot of it is going to be falling today, overnight, and into Thursday through the morning and afternoon hours across that area. There's a little bit of snow that hangs on in the far northwestern part of the state into Friday morning, but it's just a few extra inches there. The real concerns are from now going through the rest of Thursday.
This is part of this big thing that's going on across the country, right? I mean, Denver got hit by this. This is a big storm system.
Yeah, very deep, low-pressure system that when we get systems like this, it's not just the snow, the heavy snow that occurs with it, but also the winds. So if you go even further southwest out into parts of Minnesota and the Dakotas, they're also having blizzard warnings out there due to that combination of intense snowfall and strong winds going along with it. We don't have any blizzard warnings going into northwestern Wisconsin, but still going to be very impactful, heavy, wet type snow up there.
We were introduced, a lot of us, to the phrase bomb cyclone earlier this season. Is this another one of those, or is it similar?
Well, that's just one of the, we have criteria for whether or not we call a low pressure system, what we call bombogenesis. A lot of times that tends to more so happen out over the Atlantic, right along the Atlantic coast, when they have a nor'easter or something like that, where the pressure drops extremely fast in a 24-hour period. I haven't checked what our criteria is here, what kind of drop in pressure we're looking at with this storm, but regardless, it's going to be very impactful for this time of year and any time of year, for that matter.
Talking to Tim Halbach with the National Weather Service in Milwaukee, looking at our April storm bringing a lot of snow, as we just heard, to northwestern Wisconsin. Tim, you were starting to touch on this earlier. What is the rest of the state looking at, the parts of the state that aren't going to get that foot to foot and a half of snow?
Yeah, so this band of snow is moving through right now. It's going to move from south to north across the state. We do have a chance for thunderstorms going through tomorrow. And that we actually have postponed our statewide tornado drill, which was supposed to happen tomorrow, until Friday. Friday, we doesn't look like we're going to have any severe weather. We didn't want to confuse people tomorrow in case we have to issue a warning or two. We want to make sure that people know that if they get a warning tomorrow, it's going to be a legit severe thunderstorm warning or a tornado warning. We're not expecting a widespread severe weather outbreak, but the fact that we could have a warning or two has led us to want to postpone that until we have a better day to be able to do our statewide tornado drill.
One kind of warning we've seen a lot lately has to do with flooding. Is this storm going to re-raise the worry about flooding around the state?
Well, part of the Northwoods still had some snow on the ground, so they were working through a melting of some of that. So anything on top of that will help to kind of bring things up. But in terms of excessive flooding from this one, we're not at the moment expecting that. Some of the river levels are still at a high spot. So we'll, if anything, they'll continue to stay at their level for a little bit longer.
Now, we're here in Wisconsin. I think all of us know deep down that snow can happen in April, but this is coming after some warm, open-up-the-windows days for a lot of the state. How common is it for us to get this kind of snow as late as mid-April?
Well, most sites in Wisconsin average about 2 to 4 inches of snow in April, so we're within the first week and a half of the month. So it shouldn't be too much of a shock. I know that people are anxious to break out of the mentality that we can get snow, but it's pretty typical that we do get at least a couple inches. Milwaukee and Madison both average between 2 to 3 inches of snow in April. The good thing is that with the sun angle that we get this time of year, even if we do get quite a bit of snow, it goes away pretty quickly. So for those that are concerned about the snow lasting a long time, it's not like we're in the middle part of winter anymore.
Now you mentioned that statewide tornado drill canceled now because of some actual weather. It's Tornado Awareness Week. Hard to think about that, I guess, with snow on the ground. But what should we be doing? How should we be getting ready for tornado season?
Yeah, well, this is actually, the time of the year when we want to start thinking about it. We want to, before we have any severe weather, we want people to be prepared. So that's why we start doing this in early April as opposed to the middle of summer when, we've already had some severe weather. So people might joke about, doing a tornado drill in the snow. But we want to kind of – we're in that transition zone right now where we're having 70s one day and snow the other. Soon we're going to be fully into severe weather season, and we want to make sure that people are prepared going into that. So the drill hasn't been canceled. It's just been postponed from Thursday until Friday. So we'll be doing all the same testing, the same times as we had planned to do tomorrow, just pushed off until Friday.
And to take us into the weekend for the weather, what are we looking at on Saturday and Sunday around the state?
Well, going through the weekend, it looks like we're still a little bit on the cooler side for temperatures. With this time of year, we should be more so around the 50s, but we've got temperatures on Saturday and Sunday still in the 40s for quite a bit of the state. In terms of any kind of weather, it looks like we're mainly on the dry side. We do have something coming in on Sunday, which could bring a mix of rain or snow, but in terms of nailing down the details on that, I think we've been more focused on this the storm moving through today and going through tomorrow.
And Tim, leave us with some thoughts for drivers for the next couple of days.
Yeah, if you're going towards the northern part of the state, be aware of what the conditions are going to be like for wherever you're driving to. The conditions could be very bad with the winter storm warning area where that heavy snow and the wind combination is going to make it a difficult one to drive with. So be prepared for that heavy snow up there.
Tim, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
That's Tim Halbach, Warning Coordination Meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Milwaukee. He was with us to talk about a storm that's already started hitting Wisconsin, and it's expected to last through Friday morning. Could bring a foot or more of snow to a lot of northwestern Wisconsin, so get ready. Coming up, are you taking some time to think about your siblings today? We'll ask you to share some of your memories in honor of National Sibling Day. You can call in with a shout-out for brothers and sisters in your life at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And maybe share a favorite memory. We'll take your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today is National Siblings Day. Sorry for only children, but you can still play along. For people who grew up with siblings, there are often a lot of good family stories to tell. We want to hear your sibling stories, memories, and or shout-outs at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post now on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'll take your calls in a couple of minutes. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. With another winter storm barreling through the state, here's a piece from Madison comedian Esteban Tuma about what he calls the competitive sport of Wisconsin small talk.
As I step out of the deep freeze and unwrap 6 layers of winter gear in the lobby, I see Wendy from HR approaching. It's on. I'm trapped. It's time for small talk. Am I scared? Of course. This is not your average banter. This is Wisconsin small talk. And I'm facing Wendy herself, the queen of chit-chat. She's in the big leagues. As she approaches with the warmest smile, I start to sweat. This is not amateur hour.
Esteban!
She shouts, eyes sparkling.
I almost didn't make it. I had no idea why I even got out of bed today,
she says, pointing at the blizzard outside. This is why she's a legend, not even a...
Hey!
No sign of a...
Oh, how are you?
The worst thing about Wisconsin's winter is not that it sucks. It does. It's that you're forced to talk about it. A lot. But I don't even flinch. I've been training. Big smile, hands on hips, strong eye contact. The only thing that got me out of bed, I say, skipping a beat for maximum effect, was coffee. She bursts into laughter. Oh, how we chuckle and howl. Maybe Wendy from HR has finally met her match. When I arrived in Madison 6 years ago, I was unprepared. When animals meet, they growl, display their plumage, or sniff butts. Small talk in Wisconsin seemed like a similar show of dominance, and I wanted no part of it. As an immigrant from South America, I tried hard to avoid it, arriving late to all meetings, speaking Espanol to my Uber driver, or keeping it under 12 items so I could use the self-checkout machine at the grocery store. As Wendy and I move slowly down the hall, I feel like I'm doing great. She talks about the unpredictability of March, I mention Al Gore, and we share a moment of silence for the polar bears.
Aww.
I wonder to myself why Wisconsinites are so keen on this. There's no need for small talk where I'm from. Quito, Ecuador is a pretty big cosmopolitan city where we kiss hello with strangers, quickly compliment each other, and go on our way. Our social connections involve salsa music, Catholicism, and all those germs from smooching strangers. When Wendy and I reach the end of the hallway, I realize we're going in opposite directions, but we linger. Too much is on the line, and I will not go gently into that.
Have a good day!
But I must confess, compared to the frozen gray outside, Wendy's casual banter is making me feel warm inside, and I start to understand. I imagine early settlers who, after setting up and getting comfortable during the Wisconsin summer, endured their first winter weather. What stopped them from packing up and heading south? Maybe someone rolled their eyes mid-blizzard and joked, "Nice day out there, huh?" And the extended chatter that followed lasted until it was time to collect berries, split logs, go fishing, and run from bears or whatever. Wendy helped me understand that. Sure, the weather sucks, but that's a small price to pay for the ability to connect with your neighbors about how much it sucks. As far as who won our small talk showdown, neither of us gave it up. So after 42 minutes and 2 follow-up emails, we decided we are getting married! We're looking at dates for next summer, or as we here in Wisconsin like to call it, road construction season.
Esteban Tuma is a comedian in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, today is National Siblings Day. It's not currently a nationally recognized holiday, but it's still a time to appreciate brothers or sisters, if you have them. For people who have siblings, you likely have lived through some moments that have made stories worth telling. Your childhood, maybe now your adulthood, wouldn't be the same without them. Even those moments that might not have seemed so funny at the time can make priceless memories. So now, you could share some of those stories and appreciations with us. Call in at 800-642-1234 with your memories, stories, or shout-outs to a brother or sister, or plural. They can be sweet, funny, simple. Why are you glad to have them around? What's something you're thankful for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls. Kay starts us off in Madison. Hello, Kay.
Hi.
What's your story?
Well, I'm the oldest of 13.
13?
Yes. And Irish Catholic. And the chapter a day book they're reading now about the big family that was always getting into problems, you know, setting something on fire, breaking a bone. I remember one of my sisters broke her arm, I think about 5 times.
She
was kind of, she was kind of hyper, you know, different arms. And once she was jumping over me when I was laying on the floor, and I put my leg up just as she jumped over and she broke her arm. And I think I was about 30 before I dared admit that I tripped her on purpose.
Oh, no. So. Well, Kate, oldest of 13, did you do some child care yourself along the way?
Yes, I did. And we're close now. We don't get together as much as I'd like, but we really enjoy each other's company, and our mom is still alive. So there's always some good stories to tell when we get together.
And, Kate, what's the age range between you and the youngest?
Well, 72 to... about 60, 59. I have to go by who's getting Social Security now.
All right, Kate. Thank you so much for sharing that story on National Siblings Day. You have a lot of them to appreciate. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Kate with us in Fond du Lac. Kate, hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What story did you want to share with us?
Well, it's not necessarily a story, although I do have 7 brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow.
I am co-director of Camp Tubelong, Wisconsin. We are a camp that reunites siblings who've been separated by the foster care system.
Wow.
So, this is our 5th year. We are serving the entire state of Wisconsin, and our camp is held out at Camp Anakiji in Plymouth every 3rd week in August. So, it's a great experience. It's powerful. Unfortunately, these brothers and sisters don't get to experience the day-to-day meal sharing and fighting and all the fun things that siblings get to do. So we allow them to do this at camp.
And how long have they been separated often when they meet up at the camp?
Well, varies widely. Some of the children have been separated for years, others perhaps just a few months. The thing is, people don't realize that when children are removed from their biological parents for safety reasons, oftentimes they're separated from their brothers and sisters. So in Wisconsin, there's over 7,000 kids in the foster care system right now, and 50 to 75% of those kids are separated from at least one of their siblings.
Well, it got to be a lot of emotional moments as they get together, Kate.
It is. It's, you know, a fun week, but it's also a week where the kids recognize that at the end of the week, they're going to have to be separated again and not see each other, maybe until the next year when they see them at camp.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for sharing that story, and thanks for the work you're doing. We are talking about our siblings on National Siblings Day. You can call in with your stories about your brothers and sisters, a memory, maybe a shout-out at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Ellen with us in Cedarburg. Ellen, hello.
Hi. That was a great story.
Yeah.
Mine is just a little different. I have several siblings. I have two sisters. Had two sisters. My sisters are Claire and Michelle. They're younger than me. And when our sister Claire was very ill 3 years ago, my sister Michelle came on the train from Ann Arbor to Chicago every weekend to help me care for Claire. We lost our sister, which was devastating because it was due to being in a horrible nursing home. You know, it was terrible, but the three of us formed such a bond, you know, and now I have that with my sister, Michelle, whom I call Nikki. I'm just grateful for that, but I miss her because she's away, and I miss Claire.
Well, Ellen, I'm sorry for your loss, but a lot of great memories there, and it sounds like it brought you together. Thank you so much for sharing that story with us. We'll go now to Tony with us now in Wittenberg. Tony, hi.
Hi. My story is there's 8 kids in our family. I have an older brother I had, And I came home from leave from the military. I had to take my mother to the hospital. I have the youngest brother.
You came home from the military, brought your mom to the hospital, have your youngest brother delivered. Wow.
Yeah. So like 24 years apart.
Yeah, welcome home, eh?
The youngest. So I didn't really get to know my youngest brother till now I'm 70, and now we meet him get together a lot more. He was way
younger than me. He owes you one, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Tony, thank you so much for sharing that story on this National Sibling Day. Hey, there's still time for you to share your memories, your stories about siblings. Apparently a lot of big families in Wisconsin. Or if there's somebody who is like a sibling to you, still time to share that story over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We had heard a lot of great stories there from our callers. My brother was born 2 days before my fifth birthday. Right. I'm doing the math right. Yeah. And he came home on my birthday. So it was a birthday present. I didn't necessarily recognize it as much at the time, but I do appreciate it now. And I just met a new younger brother, his second kid. Now I have a niece and a nephew. Just got to meet him a couple weeks ago. Again, share your sibling stories over at the Ideas Network Facebook page, email ideas@wpr.org, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up, from Star Search to American Idol, we'll look at the history of televised TV talent shows and why people are still drawn to them today. And this, I learned getting ready from this, these shows go back a lot farther than I would have thought, like by many decades. You can join in the conversation if you are a fan of these shows, if you vote on them for the ones that allow public voting. I'm Rob Ferret. That's coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, recent studies suggest that older Americans are more likely to be deceived by online articles posing as news. Kate Archer-Kent talks to an expert on digital literacy for seniors. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, if you turn on the television these days, you're bound to see at least one talent competition as you scroll through the channels. American Idol, The Voice, World of Dance are just a few of the shows currently airing. The summer will bring the return of America's Got Talent and So You Think You Can Dance. I don't, among others. It's hard not to feel like we're in a never-ending search for the next superstar. As it turns out, we've been at it for a long time. While American Idol revolutionized the genre in the early 2000s, these talent shows have a long history on television. Our next guest is here to guide us through that history and help us figure out why we keep coming back to these shows time and again. Robert Thompson is a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, am I right? There's a lot of these talent competitions on television these days.
Yeah, they're all over the place. They're easy to produce, and they've got a long, long, long history to prove that they work. Even before there was television, even before there was radio, for that matter, talent competitions were being held on the vaudeville stage. Vaudeville, of course, went from approximately 1880 to about 1930. And then once radio kicks in, and radio, network radio starts in the late 1920s, by 1934, we had Major Bowes Amateur Hour, which was a talent competition, and it had a gong for people who didn't do well. It had a kind of nasty judge occasionally if your act wasn't very good, and it had audience participation. You could either send in a postcard, how quaint was that, or you could dial Judson 6-7000 and you could vote on telephone.
And then in the early days of TV, we had, as you said, shows, Original Amateur Hour, Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, and some big names ended up appearing. A very young Gladys Knight, I think I saw, a young Frank Sinatra. I think Elvis Presley was rejected from one of them. But these attracted a lot of talent.
Yeah, Major Bowe's original amateur hour was on radio. That was 34 to 45. And then when it moved to television in the late 1940s, a guy named Ted Mack came on, and he hosted that. And on radio, the original amateur hour, you're right, Sinatra was discovered. Maria Callas, one of the big opera people, and some other opera people as well. And then on the TV version, Gladys Knight, Pat Boone, even Louis Farrakhan, under a different name, played the violin, believe it or not, on the original amateur hour. So a lot of people that would go on to have big names, both in entertainment and otherwise performed on this. And then you mentioned Arthur Godfrey. He was on from 46 to 58 on CBS, first radio, and then TV in the very early days of television in 1948, I think. It was the number one TV show in the country. So these things have been producing stars, inventing people way, way, way before the big explosion of American Idol. And again, Sinatra and Gladys Knight move over Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson. Those were some pretty big names. And we're not even mentioning the 80s and 90s with Star Search. And that list of names is a breathtaking one.
We'll get into some more of the history and maybe some of those later stars. But I want to pause for a moment, Bob, and talk about why. These shows, as you said, number one back then. We've had number one talent shows more recently. Why do we like to watch them?
Well, I think the question would more be, why wouldn't we? I mean, in so many ways, you've got performers come on, and we get the opportunity to see someone who is we haven't heard of before. It's a competition, so we know there's going to be a winner. It's got the built-in drama of that kind of thing. In some cases, there's audience participation. We get to be part of it. And I think there is something exciting about watching someone who nobody knows yet have the possibility of becoming a star right before our very eyes. We all like to watch these, you know, VH1 and A&E and all these other things about how people became stars. Here you get to actually watch it happening before your very eyes. So it's, I think, kind of a natural sort of format and one that keeps coming back and will probably keep coming back forever.
Talking about the past, present, and future of these televised talent shows, the American Idols and The Voice and the like. Robert Thompson is with us, pop culture expert at Syracuse University. I want to move ahead a little bit. Here's a show that kind of straddled the line between variety show, talent show, and kind of our love of failure, and bringing back the gong you mentioned earlier, the Gong Show. Here's a clip of a performer who didn't quite hit the right notes. And Bob, the failure, American Idol did more of that, it seemed like, in the early days.
That's
showing
right.
the one who fell flat on their face in the early auditions. How does that, it seems like there's a love-hate relationship with those kind of clips.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought up Gong Show, because that's actually a fairly early manifestation of these things. We had the radio talent shows, we had those things we already talked about, but long before American Idol, even before Star Search, the talent show comes back in the 70s after a little bit of a break in the form of the Gong Show, which starts out as a daytime program and then becomes syndicated. And under Chuck Barris, right, from 76 to 1980, this becomes one of the trippiest, most hallucinogenic things that television has ever aired. And it's Barris wrote a book about it, which was just as trippy. They made a movie based on the book. And it's not that this didn't create some of its own stars. Andrea McArdle, who shortly after her Gong Show appearance would become the first Annie on Broadway. Paul Rubens, who we all know as Pee Wee Herman. They all started on the Gong Show. But for the most part, this was just this, it was a parody of the talent show way back in the 1970s. The unknown comic became a star on this program, a stand-up comedian who told bad jokes with a bag over his head. Gene the Dancing Machine. And, of course, Chuck Barris behaving as though he were from the planet Neptune. One of the most fascinating shows. I still love popping the old Betamax tapes in and watching these things. And they brought it back in 2017, starring not Barris. Barris, of course, had passed. But somebody named Tommy Maitland, who, of course, we all know was Mike Myers, who never left character of this host that he was playing.
Now, you mentioned a Star Search a couple times, and yeah, when American Idol came along, I was like, oh, isn't this just a Star Search? So here's a listen to Ed McMahon. He was then, of course, known best as Johnny Carson's sidekick. Here he is introducing a young performer.
Our current champion is going for win number two and sings to become next year's champion. Does that sound nice, gang? Next year's champion? Okay. From Kentwood, Louisiana, here is 10-year-old Brittany Spears.
Well, that name's kind of familiar.
It is, and she's not the most famous person that came out of Star Search. Beyonce appeared in 93. Britney Spears at 10 in 90. Christina Aguilera that same year. Aaliyah, Justin Timberlake, Leon Rimes, Usher. Who else? The comedians, Dennis Miller, Sinbad, Adam Sandler, Norm Macdonald, Dave Chappelle, Kevin James, Alanis Morissette when she was very young. This was a, you know, kind of a lower rent program. It was produced by Bob Banner, who was a friend of mine and he's long passed, but he had done Candid Camera and Dinah Shore. And this show, it had a whole bunch of categories. It wasn't just singers, but the list of people who were discovered on that show is really an impressive one.
Talk about the economics of doing a show like this. You're not paying a bunch of famous people who are already famous actors or singers or whatever.
Yeah, you got to pay a host. And you've got to keep the lights on and all the rest of it. But otherwise, it is a comparatively cheap way to take up a half hour or an hour in most of the later cases of programming. Because you're right, these people are not yet famous. You don't have to pay them a whole lot of money. You have to later after you make them famous. But it was a comparatively cheap way of doing things. Now, some of these that we've got today, they're still cheaper than doing an hour-long script program, but the production values are so complex. The audition tours and all the rest of it are complex, but the payoff can be really great. On American Idol, if you create a star, American Idol then gets to benefit from that person being a star. And the spin-off stuff as well goes way back to the radio days. You know, now with American Idol, you create the final. Finalists, you have the show, it gets huge ratings, especially in the old days. It used to be the top several shows per week. And then you go on tour. That happened with the Amateur Hour way back on radio and all the other American Idol spinoffs. Major Bo's Amateur Hour, you could buy a microphone that you could hook to your radio so you too could pretend to be on Amateur Hour. It's almost as though radio's version of Major Bo's Amateur Hour invented karaoke back in the 30s and 40s.
I'm coming up with a new format for Central Time now. We're talking about the history and popularity of televised talent competitions from Star Search to Dancing with the Stars and beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy watching shows like American Idol, America's Got Talent, The Voice? What is the appeal to you? Are you actively rooting for certain contestants? Is it just mindless fun for you? Have you ever joined in and voted on those shows where you can vote for a winner? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Oh, and if you've ever auditioned or even gone on one of these shows, definitely love to hear from you. 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll be back with Robert Thompson from Syracuse University coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the popularity of TV talent shows. Robert Thompson is with us, professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched? Have you been a fan of American Idol, The Voice, Dancing with the Stars, the other dancing shows that aren't stars, any of these talent shows, past or present? Why do you like them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Jeanette is on the line in Walworth. Jeanette, hello.
Hello and good afternoon. My story goes very quickly. Once Vic Damone had passed away, which was 1 to 2 years ago now, Sinatra came out with a quote. They found him saying that Vic Damone had the best pipes in the business. And my girlfriend Maxine said, he never heard your father. And I said, that's funny you say that. My dad won the Major Bowes Amateur Hour before Vic Damone.
Oh, no kidding.
Major Bowes came to Walworth to take my dad to Hollywood. But my little Italian grandma said, my son stays home. So my dad got a watch and a certificate, and Major Bowes said, I can't change your mind. I can't take him. And my grandma said, no, he stayed home.
Well, now, was your dad a singer? Did he keep singing the rest of his life?
We had a restaurant, and my father would very frequently come out and sing to the customers, yes.
Fantastic. Wow, what a story, Jeanette. Thank you so much for calling in. Bob, I bet there's a lot of families around the country who have that story where somebody could have been a contender for one of these shows.
Yes, I mean, there were Major Bowes, I think, did about 1,600 and some odd episodes, so it went on for a long, long, long time. But I think that is the first person I've ever heard from who is related to someone who won at Major Bowes. So, and from Walworth, a town I've been to, so that was pretty exciting.
Jeanette, thank you so much for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Irene in Phillips. Irene, hello.
Hi, gentlemen. I wonder if anybody has ever heard of the Morris B. Sachs Amateur Hour in Chicago. No.
Not me, Bob.
I haven't, and I grew up in Chicago, so I should know that.
Oh, you're probably too young. I was on the early TV in 1951 playing my accordion, and my folks owned a tavern. We were able to send in postcards, and all of the customers got postcards to send in, but I only got a watch, which I still have, and a photo. And a 78 record of my performance, and I still have that. And I still play the accordion at nursing homes around Phillips.
Well, I'll wait. If you want to go get the accordion, I'd love to hear your performance.
Is it nearby, Irene? No? Okay. Well, thank you so much. What a story. Irene, thanks for calling. Now, that sounds, Bob, like it might have been a local show, and I didn't even think about that. There were national shows, but probably there were local permutations, especially back in the day.
That is true, especially in the early days of television. Of course, 1951, TV doesn't really get kicked in until about 47. We don't get 50% of the country with televisions until 53. So that was the early days of television. And yes, just like every city had a couple of kid shows and all of these other programs, local talent shows were common as well. Again, it was so easy to do for television. It took place on a stage. It didn't cost a lot of money. It was a natural for the medium. It was a natural in 1951. It's a natural in 2019.
Thanks a lot for that call, Irene. We're talking to Robert Thompson from Syracuse University. He researches TV and pop culture there, talking about the history of televised and other talent contests. Before we go back to our callers, Bob, I want to give a listen to, and we've mentioned it a lot, American Idol. I want to give a listen to their first episode.
3 months from now, live on this very stage, an as-yet-unknown talent will be launched into superstardom.
We don't know who that is yet. Right now, they could be parking cars or even waiting on tables. Who knows?
What we do know is by the end of the summer, that person's life will change forever.
Because you at home decide who will become the next American Idol.
So Ryan Seacrest and the other guy there. And Bob, the American Idol, I mean, yes, there's a long history of these shows, but you mentioned they up the production value, and it seems like they really up the storytelling and drama value.
Yeah. First of all, a shout out that you called him the other guy.
Sorry, I couldn't remember his name.
You're absolutely right. Nobody remembers that Ryan Seacrest used to co-host that with a guy named Brian Dunkelman, and
yes,
that poor guy completely disappeared from the face of the earth. Although I think it was the final episode, they did bring him back. But anyway, that's beside the point. Yeah, what American Idol did, it was essentially two shows in the beginning. The first show was the tryouts. And the stroke of genius in the beginning, which was also kind of mean, was they had Simon Cowell, who played this guy that when somebody performed and was bad, he would say these outrageous things. Now, Major Bose would do a little bit of that, but Simon Cowell took it to a whole new level. His he had many famous things, but somebody got up there and sang badly, and he said, "Do you have a singing teacher? Yes. Do you have a lawyer? No. Fire your singing teacher and hire a lawyer and sue your singer teacher." I mean, it was that kind of thing. And that was really fun, even though it didn't appeal to the nicest part of the human spirit. That show was made, and it became number one thanks to the promos of the outrageous things that Simon Cowell would say. That began to wear thin. Now it's much less of that kind of program. But watching people fail, it turned out in 2002 when this show started, was almost, if not more appealing to a huge audience than watching them succeed.
On a related note, we have Barbara with us in Milwaukee. Barbara, hi.
Hi. Yeah, just as you were saying about the fun of watching people fail, I wonder if the guest remembers one season where they had people on who were very bad, and they thought they were good, so they weren't in on the joke, and they were trying to become the top winner, and the audience knew, everybody knew. You want to comment on that? Because it was very crushing at the end, and everybody felt horrible. And it never was on again. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I forget the name of this show. It was like The Big Show or USA Star or something like that. It wasn't American Idol. It was a different program. And you're right. It was one of the most sadistic ideas I've ever heard of. The whole thing is they all thought they were on an American Idol type of program. And they had all these judges, and they'd bring these terrible people out. And then the judges would say how wonderful they were going to be a star and all this kind of thing. It was a complete parody of these kinds of things, really mean-spirited. And then, of course, in the end, they revealed what it was all about. It only lasted one season. It shouldn't have gotten out in the air in the first place. But I have to secretly confess, it was kind of compelling to watch.
Barbara, thank you so much for bringing that up. Yeah, Superstar USA, my producer.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, yeah.
I always hope my job here at Public Radio isn't actually a secret version of that. Bob,
you'd have known by now.
Okay, I hope so. Now, looking at the current crop of shows, Bob, I know American Idol came back after ending. What, in our last minute or so, what are the best shows right now in this genre?
Well, The Voice, of course, is always competitive. Dancing with the Stars continues to be a big hit. I personally, though, like America's Got Talent, and it is now continuously, for many years now, been the top show of the summer. And what I like about it is I always thought I was born too late. I would have loved vaudeville, where you've got singers and dancers and jugglers and magicians and people who do bizarre sorts of things. And America's Got Talent is really like what vaudeville used to be in the late 19th century. And it consistently gets really high ratings. It's had several rip-offs already. And I think that show, for all of its bluster and blather, is still a pretty good show.
We'll leave it there, Bob. Thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
That was lots of fun. Thank you.
That's Robert Thompson, professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. He joined us to talk about the history and popularity of TV talent competitions. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, President Trump is making controversial nominations to the Federal Reserve. We'll look at the history of the Fed, the role it plays in our economy, and what the presidential appointees actually do on the job. Tax day is just a few days away. I hope you're not just now hearing about that. We'll take a look at where your tax dollars go. And every house has a history, but how do we track that history down? We'll hear from an expert on Wisconsin homes who tells us how to research the buildings we live in. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 7:30, the new Marquette Law School survey is out. Pollster Charles Franklin joins the show for a look at what Wisconsinites think about the president, the governor, and top issues facing the state and the nation. That's tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show. Up next, it's the news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then, Door County's public transportation system is in financial trouble, and some users are worried that the service might be reduced or even eliminated. We'll look at the problem, the challenges they face there, and some possible solutions. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.